Hello, everybody. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live again tonight. Now, we've been gone again, so you've been hearing the shows out of the archives. But we just got back from our trip from England and Russia. So we want to talk about that trip tonight and tell you all the things that happened on it. But if anyone wants to call in tonight, we do have the toll-free number. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227, if anyone wants to call in. One thing I thought was interesting is while we were gone, we are finding out that this show really is going all over the world. There was one of the men in my class in England is a doctor from Italy, from the island of Elba, and he listens to it in Italy. And even when we were in Russia, there were some English-speaking people who are listening to it in Russia. So it really is going all over the world. So I think Don has really done a good job with this venture. I think it's exceeding his wildest dreams. Okay, well, let's talk about, we first got into England, I had a class in Norwich. And Norwich is on the seacoast on the east side of England. And it's a very old city. It's beautiful, but boy, you can really feel the oldness of it, I guess is that's the word. It's the hotel we were staying in was called the Maidhead Hotel. And it had signs all through the hotel that it goes back as far as 1000, that it was always a hotel, or probably an inn back then. But also, they had a restaurant there, and there was a sign in the restaurant saying from 1267. That's a long time. You know, in America, nothing is that old, and anything here is 100 years old. We tear it down and put it in a parking lot. But over there, they have these ancient structures, and you can just feel it almost coming out of the walls, how old it is and all of the memories and things that must be associated with it. But we had our class there in this hotel in Norwich, and it turned out real well. One thing I do want to tell you about is that one of my students that took the class in London in August, it's just been a few months ago, she was the one we did for the demonstration. She's a beautiful woman. And at the time we were doing the demonstration and during the interview, this woman had come to the point where she was actually going to commit suicide. She was really so bad. She just felt her life was over. She couldn't go on any further. That she had had everything that you could possibly imagine that could happen to a person. All of the horrible things that man can do to each other had happened to her all through her life. And it had just got her to the point she just didn't want to live any longer. So it was very dramatic when we were doing the interview with the class because it was affecting everybody. And she had a growth, a tumor in her body too that she was wanting to get rid of. But during the session, the subconscious came in and said it was rewiring her brain. I'd never heard it say that before, but it was like this was something that had to be done to, I guess, change her all around. But it was rewiring her brain, and it was also working on the growth to dissolve it and to remove it from her body safely. Well, she has been emailing back and forth, and after that session, her life has completely turned around. And she was at the advanced class that I had in Norwich, and she said everything in her life has totally changed now. And she is having wonderful results by using the technique, and we are recommending her now for anyone who wants to have sessions in England. She's an excellent hypnotist now and is having wonderful results. Oh, what was it? My daughter is here. She's going to be talking tonight because she was on the trip with me. And Hyman asked her to fill in some of the things as we go along also. Her name is Julia. But what was, we just had an email since we got back from Norwich that she has now found a way to work with children through the parents. Wasn't that what she said?
Right. Another method of doing it, because that's one of the limitations with this, is working on children. But she found, and it was through an idea that was passed around, and she decided to try it, and it's worked very well. But just working through the parents, or probably just anyone close to the child, they could correct things within the child that way. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I had cases where the husband was worked on through the wife and things like that, and I gave those as examples. But I'd never really tried to work on another person through the client. So this is a whole new way of looking at this. So it shows this technique is changing. It's constantly evolving to where we're getting more and more results from it. So it's an ever-growing thing. Anyway, that's one good thing about it. That means you can experiment with it and take all kinds of chances with it. But one thing I think was funny, when we were in Norwich, we were in a restaurant, and I ordered salmon. And I always like to have sour cream with salmon. And I asked if they had any sour cream. She said, no, she didn't, the lady who owned the restaurant. And so that's okay, I'll figure something else to put on the salmon. When she brought it, here she brought some sour cream, and I said, well, I thought you said you didn't have any. She said, I made it. I said, I didn't even know you could make sour cream. That's the first time I've heard of anybody doing that, just whipping it up in the kitchen. I don't think that would happen in the States. And then there was another restaurant we went to. Now, in England, when you order things, you're never really sure what you're going to get. The words that we use for something can be totally different in that country. An example is when I order lemonade, it's not what we consider to be lemonade. It's always Sprite or 7-Up,
right,
something like that.
Right.
And so I've gotten to where I don't order lemonade because it's not the way we expect it to be. So in the one restaurant, this little young waitress came over, and we were talking about it, and she had it on the menu, was talking about lemonade, and
right.
I said, well, it's probably Sprite. She said, what did she say? You want the fresh squeeze?
Well, you just said it's probably not the lemonade that I'm used to having, and she said, oh, I can make that.
The fresh squeeze?
And you kept saying, oh, I don't think you could. She said, oh, I can make it. And so she went and made it. It's probably one of the best glasses of lemonade you've ever had.
Well, she went back and made it there in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where in the States would you find a young girl waitress working in a restaurant who'd be willing to go back into the kitchen and make something special from scratch?
Wondering how many people would know how to make something from scratch.
Especially the kids. The kids nowadays, I don't think they would.
Right.
So that's really different. In Norwich, anyway, they were willing to go the extra mile and do things you didn't even expect it. Well, that's really service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the food was wonderful over there. But anyway, the class turned out to be really good. We had the advanced class. I'm having an advanced class now everywhere I go for those who have taken the class before. It gives them some extra tricks, what I call, say I have a whole bag of tricks that they don't have anywhere else, and I haven't been taught before. I didn't say that right. There's a whole bag of tricks that I haven't taught the other classes, and there's just too much, so we do it at the advanced class. But then we had a regular class also
that
turned out really well.
Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm. But then we had to go on to Moscow. And it was a good thing I took my heaviest coat that I had. I had a big, heavy wool coat with a fur collar. It wasn't so bad in England, but boy, when we got off the plane in Moscow, it was cold. She's shaking her head, but I think it was cold.
It was 30 degrees.
We got in there that night, it was below freezing.
Maybe a couple of degrees.
Well, I was cold.
It wasn't that cold.
They had,
there was snow on the ground, I will give you that.
They had snow piled up in drifts where it had been snowing, and they cleared off the highways and the streets, and it was all piled up. They're pretty good at clearing off the highways, but still, where we had to walk back to where the class was being held, there was ice, and I don't like walking on ice. I can't understand how those girls can do it. They walk around in these high-heeled boots, and our translator, she's a wonderful girl. Her name is Julia also, was saying, oh, we've just do it. Yeah. We've done it all our life.
Right, right. They walk everywhere. They just, this is how they live. They just know how to do this.
And so I was worried about falling on the ice. They said, it's dry ice. It's a difference. I said, I can't afford to break a leg in Moscow. I got a long way to go to get home. But I think the last night we were there, too, it began snowing again.
Yes. Yes, and it was snowing when we left
That
morning.
Now, that was a little slick. I didn't like that. Uh-huh. It was new snow. But what a difference. We come back home, and it's springtime. All the daffodils are out, and the trees are blooming. So, quite a difference. Your body doesn't know where it's supposed to be, back and forth between climates. But we did have the class in Moscow. And we had it for 4 days instead of three, because with a translator, I knew it was going to take longer. The last class I did there was 2006, and I knew in 3 days I couldn't teach them everything I wanted to teach them, because there was just not enough time with going back and forth with the translator. This time we had 4 days, and it still wasn't quite enough. I still had some things I didn't teach them. But this translator, Julia, she is just outstanding. And I know she was worn out, and I was worn out, too, because it's a very hectic way to hold a class back and forth like that. And then the students asking questions. I think we had about two students that even understood English,
yes.
Didn't we?
I think you had a third person that understood a little bit or could speak a little bit. So, but, yeah, it wasn't very many.
But, you know, you're talking, and you want to keep talking, and you have to keep stopping so they can catch up with you. And a lot of the terms and things they don't understand. But this one was a good one. I think we're going to have some good people over there who are going to be able to do the technique. And so I did lectures first, and then to do the classes. And we're already arranging to go back to Moscow in October and do it again. We're going to have another class over there the first part of October. So I guess I'm going to be doing classes regularly in Moscow. They're very interested in doing
this. They're very hungry over there for this, as well as all of this information and this knowledge. And that's a whole other thing that's opening up over there, is this the revelation or the revolution. We call it the expansion of Russia.
So. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is the difference in all of this. Because I know back before I ever went over there the first time, all of the propaganda and what they've always told you about Russia, I was expecting all that to be true. And I found it's not true anymore. But this time we were able to get a lot more history, wasn't it, from our translator. I said, tell me what's going on. Because, you know, before they always said the Russians didn't have any appliances. They didn't have refrigerators, washing machines, nothing. Because everybody was too poor. Everybody was running around in like the typical picture you always have of the Russian women with the scarves and everything. This is one of the things they were saying, and one man, when I came back, he said, you mean they aren't fighting over the last piece of bread? And they said in the stores they used to be, there wasn't anything to sell, maybe one thing on the shelf. But that was the picture I had of Russia. And they also said they didn't have any cars, a few, and they had to take off the windshield wipers every night to keep them from being stolen. That was a picture I had of Russia when we go over there. And it's not that at all. It has totally changed. It's like a piece of America, isn't it?
Well, it's a big city. It may not be quite completely up to speed as far as a big city in America, but it's really close. I mean, you know it's a big city. You know it's not like you're in a third world country. That it doesn't have that feeling about it. You know, you're in a big city. It just may not have quite everything that you're used to having, but it's really close. It's not the other picture you were painting, for sure.
Definitely not. Because when I went the first time, I found out they had malls where it had all the stores like we have here. They have all of the things we want to buy, beautiful clothes. Here in the winter, the women and the men are walking around with big fur coats and fur hats and boots.
They like to dress up there. I guess it'd be like here in the big cities, people dress up more than in the countryside and everything. So.
But it's not at all the way you picture it to be. And they have everything that we have. Of course, they live in apartments, but then the same thing in New York, London,
yeah,
and all
the big city.
Any big city, they don't have room for houses. So they're all crammed into apartments that are expensive by the standard over there anyway. But that's what we were talking to our translator about. I said, now tell us what's happened, because this is the picture we had. And she began telling us the history of what's been going on. But we know it was under oppression by the government, first with Stalin, and then with Khrushchev and Gorbachev and all that. That's a whole different thing. But tell her, do you remember what she was saying about that, about how it had changed? It was way back in those days is when the government told everyone what to do. That was pure communism back then.
Well, I know they lifted, but I don't remember when she said that part of it lifted. But I know the biggest part has lifted just recently, where we were thinking it was further ago. It's really only been in the last 5 to 10 years that they have really had these things lifted. And they have their somewhat, you know, freedom. And so that's why, because we were there the last time, I felt like there was this attitude of aggression, like there wasn't enough and they had to get in and get their things and stuff. I didn't have that feeling this time, but that I think that's where that was coming from. It was like, there's plenty for everybody. Why are you acting this way? Well, if they've only had this different sense of empowerment for the last 5 or 10 years, they don't really understand it yet, and they don't feel it yet. So that explains what we're seeing over there. So, okay.
But they said, in addition to the government changing, a complete different government now. It's almost like, I don't want to say freedom, but I think they do have a lot more personal freedom than they've ever had before.
Right. They don't have somebody standing over them telling them minute by minute what they can and cannot do. I mean, now it's the government. I mean, like, probably more like what we're used to. Yeah, you have your rules that you follow, things like that, but you don't have anybody, you know, guiding every minute what you can and cannot do. So.
But she said after the government became easier, then the church was brought back. Because, you know, during all of these other strict communist regime, the church was banned. All the churches were closed and religion was outlawed. That went on for many years. Well, she said, now the churches are opened up, so it's shifted from the control by the government to the control by the church.
Well, and that's primarily because the people were used to being controlled, and they were used to going to a place and being told what to do. So the church filled that void that was created. All of a sudden, it's like some people just, you know, that was until they can adjust to the new freedom, that was why it was built to satisfy that need. So.
And I guess it would be like a need if they've never known anything else, any other way of living besides somebody telling you what to do.
Right. You can't go from that to just total freedom. I mean, you almost have to have a stepping stone or a bridging kind of thing to get you from this point to the other point. Otherwise, it's just like just everything being released at once and you don't know what to do. And sometimes that might be worse than having all the protection on over here. It's like, just take it off gradually and let you feel spread your wings. So.
Because it'd be like a child who all of a sudden with loud freedom, they don't know what to do with it.
Right, right.
To go out. They don't have a lot of money, but it seems like they have enough, and so they are being allowed more freedom.
Well, I think they were gaining some, and this is something else that you're probably going to get to it here, but they had, it's like they have things, but they've recently had what they call a crisis, and they've had more than we have. They've had something very recently happening in their economy and everything, and so they are just pulling out of that. And then now with what's happening with us over here, they hear the word crisis, and they're, you know, kind of caught, they're caught up in that, and they're thinking it's another crisis like what they have just pulled out of. And so
it frightens them.
It does. And so in that regard, I mean, they're like, oh, we're losing our jobs, or our jobs are being cut back or whatever. And I think some of it, I don't know how much is, you know, I don't know what's playing off of what, but I think some of it is just some of their anticipation of thinking it's like the last one they just came out, because they just recently came out of things. And
did
she
say about 2003.
That they've had their major, yeah, some things
major
that just happening.
Shift.
Then,
that's
so
very recent.
Very recent. And so that's within everybody's recent memory. And so, and that was what surprised me, was this one gentleman was talking to me, and he
spoke English.
He spoke English, yeah. I didn't have an interpreter. and he mentioned he was wanting to attend the class. And it was like he wasn't quite sure if it was going to work out this time. And he said, well, you can come back in October. He said, but you won't be here in October. I was like, yes, we will. Why wouldn't we be? Well, the crisis, you might not be here. And it was like, I'm thinking, well, that's not going to keep us from coming. I mean, what's going on? What's this crisis? We have a little thing over here that they call a crisis, but it's not going to, I just don't see it that way. And then once I understood how they're explaining, you know, what's been going on over there, and the way he described it, it's like there's so much pressure on the United States. They are heavily dependent on what we do with our dollar over here and how we work with our economy and everything. It's like that makes or breaks them. That was his attitude. What we do affects them directly. And it was just like I felt this tremendous weight on my shoulders all of a sudden that was like, oh, we are responsible for them, in a way, you know.
And that's
like
a big hunk of the world. I guess,
yeah,
we don't realize that. But, yeah, he said the dollar and what we do.
Yeah.
And I would think Russia is such a big country that it wouldn't have to be depending on any other country in the world.
Right, yeah. And they're all looking to President Obama. I mean, that's he's like the savior. And it's like, I don't know if that's just part of still some of this attitude of being taken care of. I don't know, or not being. That's just hard for me to understand another country of that size and that ranking to feel that they are totally dependent on what we do here. You know, I explained to him that, and he was talking about the changes that they just went through and the major changes. And I explained. I said, okay, and you're going through some tough times. He said, yes. I said, okay, that's how it is in any change. I said, understand, we are doing the same thing. We are taking on a new course, a new path, and it's a big change for our country. And so we're going to have some rough times. But understand that our aim is very high, and we are going to a very high and good place with where we're going. And so don't look at the immediate rough time as that is your crisis. You know that we are going to a good place. And so to not fear when you see these things, that was my main message, was not to be afraid of what's happening in the interim and everything. And because they're so built in fear, they're so afraid.
Well, they have lived their lifetime in fear.
Right, right. And see, that's where we don't understand that. That's something foreign. It's just as foreign, you know.
But he did ask something interesting about President Bush.
Yeah.
You're talking
yes.
about President Bush.
Okay. He, and this has been asked by some other people in other countries too. They couldn't understand why we didn't stop him and why we allowed him to do what he was doing. And
they thought we all approved.
Yeah,
him.
They think we approve. And that was the hardest thing, was to get them to understand we did not approve. And they said, well, then you would have stopped him. And it was like, no. And all I could come up with is, well, a lot of these things happen so gradually that we didn't realize what was happening, and our rights were being taken away, our things were happening, we were getting complacent, we really didn't care. Different things were happening that we didn't know what was happening until we got to a point, and then we could see. And at that point, it was almost too late. We couldn't do things. And so then we felt like, when with this election, we were getting our voice back, and it was a way of
our power back.
Yes, and we were told by other people in other countries that they felt like we as Americans redeemed ourselves when we voted President Barack Obama in, and that was very interesting to see how other countries see us. But they see that as very, they said now that it pulled us up very much in their eyes.
Because
so,
I told them before, we were on the way to Australia and New Zealand
when
the election was happening.
Right.
And when we got there, they were very excited.
Yes.
It was even on the news. We saw it on the news in countries all over the world dancing in the street.
Yes.
And they said, when have you ever seen other countries dancing in the streets about an election of a president in America?
Well, everybody knew about it. And I don't know of other, usually it's not, it's just okay. And that's what they're telling us in Australia. They might just it might be a brief mention on the newscast. This election happened, here's the new president. And that'd be it. But they would have days of coverage. They said, this has never happened before with any election in another country. This doesn't happen. And so this is something that I guess that goes back again to this view of Russia. They are so, I guess what happens in America, it really does affect these other countries mentally, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't.
Well, even in England, they're very excited about Obama.
Yeah.
Everybody feels this is a turning point. This something really big is going to come out.
Well, I think it may not even be that. It might be that we as a people, and we took our power back. I think that may be more of what it represents than necessarily this one man and what he can do. I think it's we as a people and a country have now stepped up to bat again, and we have taken our power back, and now we will be back in our rightful place of whatever, you know. So that was the feeling I got.
But I also got the feeling, the countries we've gone to, it's a feeling of hope.
Yes.
That
yes.
Maybe now everything is going to get better. But there again, it's relying on America and what we do.
Well, that's what we try to spread. The message mainly we try to do is that it is of hope and not of fear. And we are, you know, we've taken this step. We're doing this. It's not necessarily to be dependent on us, but maybe by our actions, then maybe we will motivate other places to take actions for themselves as well. So
uh-huh.
I think that's kind of what's happened, is that may be why that's so exciting to everybody. They see what we did, and we may not fully understand it to that degree, but I think that may be what it is. We stepped up, we took it back, and, you know, and we go forward. And that's the biggest thing. And it does give hope. It gives hope to the American, or to the person, to the personal triumph, you know, of what you can do. It doesn't matter. You may be knocked down to sub-level.
Mm-hmm.
You can still come back and you can come up. So.
Mm-hmm. Because I didn't realize until I was giving my first lecture in Moscow this time, right before the class, and the questions they were asking, it was just like all of a sudden, this is very important information. They haven't heard this kind of thing before.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was just dealing with my work, you know, with reincarnation and life after death and all these things I always tell at the lectures, it was being received in a different way.
Yes, it was a different angle. It was a slightly different twist on how they thought about it.
Never heard some of these things before.
Right, right. In some ways, they came across as very advanced, and in other ways, they would ask some very simple basic things. So it was almost like it was very hard to figure out where they were in in the whole process. And so,
Well, my books are just now being translated over there. So they're just now finding out about what I'm writing about. And my publisher there has said there's a big hunger now. They really want my books over there. So they're going to print all of them. They're translating them all right now because they're easy to understand, even though it's a whole different way of looking at things. So maybe this is going to make a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like the one, I was just talking about life after death and the things that I talk about everywhere, and I didn't think anything about it. I mentioned the lecture, that there is no hell.
Yeah.
And I've told that on my show before, you know, there is no hell.
People apparently need a hell. they went up in arms. Yes, there has to be a hell. There is a hell. There is a hell. And it was like, why do you need a hell? they were fighting for their hell. So.
Well, there again is the church taking control now, and they have to be told what to do.
Yes. Now, this isn't everyone. They weren't all like this.
Oh,
but,
no.
But it was just interesting because it's more than usual in a group that you give a lecture to.
Metaphysics.
Like that, you know. Yes.
Usually metaphysical, they have already figured all of this out, so they're still mixing the two together, I think.
Right.
Something like that.
I think so, and it was more of a cross-section of their population rather than usually you get a different cross-section in a group. So.
But at that group, there was everyone was allowed to come.
Yes.
All walks of life, and the classes usually have the ones that have the money in order to take the classes. You know, the doctors, psychologists were in the class.
Right.
So that's the difference. In the lecture, there were just everybody. But one thing I think puts me on the spot, when I go back in October, well, during the class, we crossed across some things. They had so many questions that were diverting from what I was trying to teach about my method. A lot about life after death and things like that, and we were going into a lot of things that had to do with women. Yes, another thing, the women have been very suppressed.
Very suppressed, and they are just now, I mean, they're starting to realize that they can do things, that they can, and or at least that the suppression is off of them or something. They're starting to realize that, and then you were saying, I mean, the message that weekend from the first lecture through the class was, you are in control of your life, you make your decisions, you create your life,
you create your reality,
you create all of this, and they were having a hard time with that because, they're used to being told what everything is, and so now, and it was just to first wrap their heads around that idea. Well, then, they were taking the next step further in the class, and it was like, okay, we need more of this. We need to be told how to create and how to take that, how to empower, So.
And I was really surprised, but then the translator said, you got to come back and give a lecture or a workshop just for women.
Yeah, women's workshop, women's
empowerment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, well, why? You know, we don't think of that over here, but they said, you've got to come back and empower the women of Russia. I said, that's going to be a big job.
because the women are very strong there, but I guess it's a different, maybe they're strong for the fighting for things or whatever, but this is a different strength.
To know they can take control of their lives.
Yes, because it's totally a foreign concept to them. They did not get it. Had a hard time with it.
I know one of them in the class said, it's time for the women to take over the world. I said, well, yeah, the men haven't done a very good job. It's about time for the women. Give them a chance. Women don't start the wars. So this is part of it. They said they want me to come back in October, and one of the things is to give a lecture just for the women. Well, that's going to be a challenge. What am I going to tell them?
Figure it out.
To empower the women of Russia. Okay. Boy, the things I get led into. Never know what's next on the agenda here.
Right.
Well, one thing I found was interesting, too, well, the infrastructure of Moscow especially needs a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the money, they said, to do it either.
Right. It's something they have to do gradually because this has just all happened so quickly. you know, she was talking about the roads, I think the three were going
on. The highways are the main thing, yeah.
It's just bumper to bumper. It's terrible. The way they have the roads designed is just really convoluted. but she said they were designed for 850,000 vehicles a day to be on them. And they have something like 3 million vehicles a day on them. So it's just constant. I mean, they're not designed with flow in mind at all.
To flow into each other.
Right, not at all, not at all. They're just, everything, and it's just the oddest angles that things come in and they don't flow, and it's just stopping all the time. And but that's something that they're working on. It's just going to take them a while, so...
But you can imagine people, only a few years ago, very few people had cars. It was a luxury, and it was only old cars, and nobody had them. All of a sudden, everybody's got a car.
Right.
So they're just flooding the highway. What last time I was over there, it took 2 hours to get to the airport
mm-hmm.
from Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
On the train, it took us about an hour.
But she said it can take up to 6 hours.
Traffic is really bad.
By car, it can take up to 6 hours to get to the airport.
So I was thinking that the highways would be one of the first priorities if they're going to put things in priority. But she said other things have priority.
Right. There's just a lot of things. They're being hit with several things at once that they have to do, and they're doing the best they can, you know, to turn into this modern, up-to-date city.
Yeah, but all of a sudden, if it happens so quickly, what do you tackle first?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think roads are very high on their priority.
I think so. But there, I'm trying to think of anything else. One thing I found was very interesting is the way you get a taxi.
Oh.
But you know,
it's an enterprising society. They're very enterprising.
Okay. Well, you know, in New York and London, if you want a taxi, you stand out on the curb and hold up your hand, and any of the yellow cabs come by or the black cabs in London, they stop and pick you up. It's very easy, simple procedure. They say in L.A., if you want a taxi, you stand out on the curb and hold up your hand, they just wave at you and go on. You have to have call one. But we're used to just standing out and holding up your hand and getting a taxi. But in Moscow, I don't know. I think it'd be a little dangerous the way they do it. But
what they're used to. Now, to get a taxi, you would do it the same way. But
If you ordered a taxi, they would come.
Right, but also if the taxi were going by, if it were on their hours, they would stop for you that way too.
But they don't get as many. Not like
New
York.
No, we weren't seeing any. So what they do is, people, just to make some extra money, because they are in a crisis of sorts over there. They are having a thing happen. And so a lot of the people have their jobs have been downsized and things. So for a way for them to make extra money is on their way to work or whatever. If you need a ride, you just put your hand out. And if they want to make a little extra money, they'll stop and pick you up and take you where you want to go. And, you know, over here, I don't know how safe that would be, but... It's you know, I mean, we had our translator with us, so that was, and she knew the system, she knew, you know, I guess you follow your gut on that one. I don't know, it's just different. So
listen,
I thought it was very enterprising. I mean, they're not making enough money. This is a way for them to make some more money. So
yeah.
Another thing that was interesting that said right off the bat, that one man said, somebody said, the elevator, I was in that elevator that day. They weren't seeing many Americans over there right now because of the crisis. And he thought I was over there to adopt because that was about the only Americans that they were seeing were people over there to adopt. And when I explained we were there on business, he was very excited because they just weren't seeing many Americans. So for anything, for enterprise, apparently.
Well, winter anyway, too.
Right, but you know, maybe it used to be, it usually is more than that, so.
Yeah, but I thought it was strange that, you know, our translator is a very beautiful young girl, and we saw other young girls, too, and they're just standing out there with their hand out for any car to come by to give them a ride. I was thinking, you know, I think that would be dangerous for a pretty young girl out there. Anybody could pick her up, take her off. You wouldn't know what was going on, but they aren't afraid of it.
No, no, you know, it's their city. They know the people. they're just different, I think.
Well, the one man that we got a ride with, he did tell her that his job had been downsized.
Yes, and what he had said was he made the equivalent of, when we were figuring up later, he said it in rubles, and but basically he had been making, he was married and they had four children, and he was making the equivalent of $600 a month. And he had, his job had just been downsized, and now he was making half that amount. And so he was subsidizing or supplementing with by driving. And I was just thinking, you know, so that meant he was making, he was supporting a family of six on $300 a month. And what we were seeing in prices over there and things that we were buying, it wasn't that much less than what we pay over here.
For the food and the restaurants?
Yes, yes. So that's something to, you know, yeah, he was having a tough time, I'm sure of it. Now, you know, people are in different places, but that was, he's having a hard time.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's, it just, we, I don't think we would think of that in the States, just stop to pick somebody up and make a little extra money.
Well, I think they might, but that, Julia reminded us that we have laws over here that probably wouldn't let them do that, but I thought that was very enterprising. You know, I need some extra money, I'll go and do, there's something I can do. People need rides, and they're willing to pay for it, so I'll give them a ride. So.
Yeah. You'd have to have a license in the States, I guess.
Yes, you would. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
But we just found that, you know, everywhere I go, I like to be, you know what's going on anyway, and, you know, be involved in it. You learn so much when you're traveling. But I think this is important to find out what that country's really about.
Well, it helped us to understand the people. Like I said, the last time we went, I didn't understand. There was an underlying feeling or attitude of lack and aggression. And like they had to, I mean, I would be standing in line. Well, as soon as we got off of the plane and we were in the taxi going in town, this was the last time, not this time. And it was interesting because it wasn't happening at all this time. But the last time, it was like even the drivers were very aggressive, and they were all cutting each other off and trying to get in for a space. And it just felt like an aggression about it. I was standing in line to get some food at the airport, and I was trying to get served, and people kept just stepping in front of me like they had to get the last ones, like it wasn't going to last. And I'm thinking, there's plenty for everyone. And I couldn't understand that. Well, it wasn't there this time, so I don't know if something's changed or I don't know what's going, if it's me or if it's them or what, but I didn't feel it this time. The traffic was bumper to bumper, and people just move in and out. I mean, they just go in, but I didn't feel that aggressive feeling this time. It was more like they just worked with each other to allow them in.
The traffic to come in
and
out. And
I didn't feel that pushing and shoving feeling like I felt before and stuff. So it could be that, you know, they're changed. It could be them. It's probably them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that or I'm getting used to it. I don't know. but I just didn't feel it this time. So it felt more comfortable this time.
Yeah. Well, we were there longer this time, too.
Yeah.
In and out, it makes a difference.
Right.
But the people on the rule are very nice. They're nice everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, I always thought it's the way you treat people is the way they're going to treat you.
Well, we kept looking at people, and you get on the elevator, I'm like, oh, she's going to speak English. She's American. And no, she's not. I mean, they look just like us, and that's one of the hardest things is you're looking for something that's familiar, and these people, I mean, it's like everybody looks like us, but then they don't, you know, we can't understand each other when we speak, and I keep hearing the language, and my brain is trying so hard to pick out something familiar. Now, I could pick out some words, so they do say some words like us, but for the general rule, they do not.
That's what I said. It takes a few days when you get out of there for your brain to unscramble. This gives you an idea of trying to do a class with a translator. But, yeah, anything, you know, all the Romance languages in Europe, the ones that are based on Latin, those, they got something in common. You can pick out words, especially if you see it written. You can get an idea because there is some similarity between English and German and French and Spanish and all of that. And we all have the same alphabet. But you go over there, you'll have anything at all to relate to, and that really scrambles your brain.
Right. You're looking for something, anything to be familiar. And it's not. It's just not there. I did this once before when I went to another country where all that was spoken around me was the other language. And my brain just starts going, just start saying it. Just start speaking to them. They'll get it. And then just like, just go blah, blah, blah. They'll understand. You know what I mean? It's like trying to tell my brain, no, they won't. I really don't know how to do this. And I'm having this conversation with my brain. You know?
Uh-huh. Because the brain is desperately seeking a word or something it can identify with. And they have a few words that are the same.
Yes, yes.
But those
are
the only thing.
Right.
And the alphabet, the signs, there's nothing.
No.
The letters are all different. It's the Cyrillic alphabet. And if you look at a sign, you can't even begin to figure out what it's trying to say.
No. No.
So our poor brains get scrambled when we go over there.
But that's my next mission, is I have decided to start learning the Russian alphabet and how the letters are sounding, so that at least maybe I can read some signs. I can read, so maybe I won't be quite so lost. So my brain will have something to attach to.
Oh, without our translator, there wouldn't have been any way we could have got around.
No.
The ones that speak English are very rare.
Yes.
Very hard to find.
And that's unusual, because usually when we go to another country, there are more people that speak English, and there just weren't that many.
No.
I mean, no. I was amazed, because we were in shops, and I'm used to the shopkeepers and things will speak some English, and they didn't. There was just nothing, and I'm lost then, because I... I don't know how to speak to you, and you don't know how to speak to me, so...
You use a lot of sign language.
Yes.
But one thing I think is so funny, when you see the sign, we did learn one sign, it means it's a restaurant when we see it. But with the Cyrillic alphabet, when we see the sign, it looks in our mind like Pectopal. And it said that's a restaurant, Pectopal. And we tell that to the translator, and she'd laugh, and said, that's not how you say it, but that's what it looks like with these weird, like the P is like our R, like that. It's the best our brain can come up with. And so this time I said, well, how do you pronounce that? If it's not Pectopal, how do you pronounce it?
And she says, restaurante. And Mom is trying to make it still something else. She's still saying a foreign word, and it was like, no, she's saying it's restaurante, it's restaurant. That's exactly what the word is.
But it doesn't look like that. It looks like Pectopal.
So that's why, so that P is an R, and, I mean, we'll figure out the rest. I've got some learning to do.
Yeah, Julia said she's determined to get a dictionary and see the letters, and we can at least figure out what it's trying to say. I think it's a long way before we'll be able to talk it.
Yeah, I'm not even putting that out there as a goal. I just like to have, you know, if I can start maybe being able to read it and have some understanding, I think that'd be great for me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know what the word, the stop sign, I know what that says. We figure that out.
Some things are universal.
But, yeah, those things that you can usually figure out. But it is quite an adventure. You go to a place where there's absolutely nothing you can relate to. And then you really feel how...
We kept looking at the menus in the restaurant. Kept looking at it every day. We went to the same restaurant, kept looking at the menu, thinking, one of these days I'm going to understand what it says. I mean, there's nothing in there. It's all the same stuff every day.
Well, if they had some pictures in the back, that was the only way.
But otherwise, no.
Because here our translator is trying to translate all of this food and tell us what it is. And, of course, it gets very confusing. Then you start looking around at the people eating at the other tables and say, I want what that guy has. That's the only way you could do it. Okay, we have a caller. Hello? I thought I heard the beep. Is there anybody there?
Hello?
Yeah, we only got about 5 minutes. Can I answer
you? I know. Hi, Dolores. I would like to say thank you for your work and just really admire. Really admire of how hard work you. You're working very hard. And I am Russian. And my question is, how many books it's going to be on Russian? Or is anything available on the Russian? I call at your office, and they told me the book's not translated yet, as much as I understand.
They are being translated now.
There are, there's Nostradamus 1 and Nostradamus 2 are currently out. First half of Custodians.
Is translated.
Yeah, those are the three that are out now. They're going to redo Between Death and Life and Jesus and the Essenes. That was originally done by Sophia Publishing, and now this company is taking over, and they will be doing those. And then we're signing, we just got a list yesterday of like six books
six more.
That they want to come out with immediately, and those are like, that'll be the big percentage of them. Then they'll go back to these bigger books again. They want to get out the smaller ones so they can go and get them going fast. So they will be being done probably in the next few months.
So our new publisher over there is called Stigmarion. Stigmarion Publishers. And it's
they said
everybody wants the books, so they're going to get them out as quick as possible in Russia.
I know.
You'll be able to read them soon. Are you calling from Russia?
No, I'm calling from Canada, but my English not as good reading. I read good on Russian, but my English not that good.
It's better than our Russian, believe me.
Oh, don't worry, guys. You don't need, because English is international, so you're okay. You're in a good shape. Want to say you again, thank you, Dolores, and I really love about you, which you are so positive. And it's so important in this time to just let people with nothing that's so scary and horrible, just try to work out on your karma, get rid of the fears, and you're going to be okay. Stay positive.
Exactly.
That is the message we're trying to give to the people of the world. Think positive. And we're coming to time to close, and thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, I just, very many people call, and I don't know how many people tell you, but I just want to call to say thank you for that hard work, and you are one of the really working women.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to have to sign off here in just a minute, but thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dolores, and have a good night.
Good night. Okay. But that is the message we're trying to give everywhere we go. We're all people. We're all living on the same world. Everywhere we go, they don't want wars. They don't want aggression. All they're worried about is their family, taking care of their family, having a job to bring in money. They're not out trying to hurt people or to the aggression and the wars. That's the leaders.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But I don't really think we have anything to fear from Russia, because they're going to be too occupied trying to get their country straightened out.
Right. Well, we don't need to fear. Again, that's part of that other thing going on.
Other mentality.
Yes. But like she said, just you take care of your karma, and you don't fear, and you move forward. Everything is fine. You take care of your world, and everything else will be fine. So the rest of the world.
Just remember, we're all more alike than we are different.
Absolutely. Yes. No matter what language we speak.
The more you travel, the more you see it. We're more alike than we are different. Okay, we're coming up to the time now we're going to have to sign off. The hour always goes very fast. And if anybody is interested, oh, yeah, next week I won't be on live because I have my class here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Now, if anybody is interested in my classes, private sessions, or my schedule, where I'm going to speak, or want to know anything about the books, you can check in on our website, www.ozarkmountain.com. And that's abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com. You can find out all about everything we're doing. We're going to be having a conference in June, and we're going to be promoting that mostly in the next few months. It's going to be a really big one here in Fayetteville. And if you want to call the office, the 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. And we'd love to hear from you. And I'm going to be doing a lot of publicity about the conference if it comes up here. And if you want to take the classes, just let us know. All right. I think it's time to sign off now. And thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. And good night to everybody, no matter where you are in the world.
Good night.